host of A Secret Dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. Saturday night, I am Jeremy Scott, and it's time to go into the paranormal. You know, the name para-abnormal, because sometimes it's paranormal, sometimes it's abnormal, and I think tonight it is a little bit of the same. The name of our show is Violated by Ghosts. Those brave enough to venture into haunted places, or those occupying a haunted space, unbeknownst to them, have reported seeing apparitions, maybe feeling something brush past them, or even sensing a presence. And others have had more intimate experiences with these spirits. But the question is, how do you prove this? Well, over the years, people have tried many different ways to prove of contact with the spirit world or with ghosts. And they've done it through EVP. They've done it with a variety of gadgets and gadgets. However, tonight on the program, I can safely say it is an angle to this whole phenomenon that we have not discussed on the program, which is always fascinating to me. Tonight on the program, we have Ross Allison and we have Chad Goodwin, who are behind the film Parasense, The Naked Experiments, which will debut at the Oregon Ghost Conference this coming Friday night. Paranormal veteran Ross Allison focusing his attention on trying to prove the physical aspects of ghosts actually touching the living. And he's joined by scientist and inventor Chad Goodwin as they take willing subjects who happen to be naked into the most haunted sites known for supernatural physical contact. These are areas where there have been known to been a contact of a physical nature on investigations in the past. And for the first time in history, these encounters are thoroughly investigated. Ross Allison is a ghost hunter by trade, a parapsychological investigator by heart. He has been involved in the paranormal field for close to 30 years. And with 12 books under his belt and numerous appearances in various media outlets around the world, Ross also lectures through the U.S. and offers tours through his company, Spooked in Seattle, and he literally does go all over the world. He's just back from the other side of the pond. I'm so glad to hear that he made it back safe and sound. He's here with us now. Ross Allison, welcome back to Into the Paranormal.
Well, thanks for having me.
And we're also joined tonight by Chad Goodwin, who is an inventor and scientist with 9 patents in the space of energy storage. Over the last 12 years, he has created many pieces of test instrumentation for research applications. And 3 years ago, Ross contacted him to team up and apply both of their skills to find supporting data that suggests ghosts and specifically touch is real. Since joining Ross's team, Chad has become a parascientist in applying the scientific approach to researching paranormal activity. He's also joining us. Hello, Chad Goodwin. Welcome into the paranormal.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
My pleasure. Did you ever think that you would be working on a paranormal project?
You know, no, not really. I've known Ross for some time now, and him and I have talked about it over the years, but I was a little shocked when he called me and asked me if I join his team for real.
So coming at from a scientific background, can science be applied to what Ross does, investigating the paranormal?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the scientific method can be applied to just about anything, right? So this seems to be one of the very, you know, few things that has been applied to properly. And I'm excited to, you know, be researching. We're finding a lot of fun stuff.
Ross, you've investigated a lot of intriguing places like lighthouses and prisons and churches and the whole nine yards. Why the touch?
Well, you know, throughout the years I've been doing this, as you've said, I've been doing this for going on 30 years now. There have been numerous cases that have come to me where people claim to be touched, and in some cases in not the nicest way. Sometimes it could be in a violent or even sexual. And stories like that have always been so intimate, and it's been so personal. And no one's ever tried to prove those encounters. We just have to take, you know, people by their word when they say, oh, I've been touched by a ghost, or I've been fondled by a ghost. And I just had a recent case, you know, it was, well, I shouldn't say recent, it was about 6 years ago when a young man contacted me after he was doing some construction work in an old abandoned brothel. And he was alone upstairs when something grabbed his crotch. And when he told me the story, I was just like, yeah, you know, I've heard this stuff before, but how do you prove that? And I just got to thinking about it, and I was just like, you know, I wanted to see if we can make these personal encounters valid for people.
Things always happen when you're doing live radio, and I'm always a little bit intrigued when we're talking about ghosts and we're talking about mucking with the system. So, Ross, you were saying, and then we just got cut off. Can you go back and revisit for us?
We should blame the ghost for this, right?
Absolutely.
Well, as I was saying, this young man had contacted me about his physical encounter, and it just really got me thinking, like, how do you prove these encounters? And no one had ever tried, and no one's ever really tried to try and prove touch. So I spent the past, you know, 5 years trying to come up with different experiments and proving this phenomena. And then from there, as I was starting to realize that it was still getting very limited responses, I also realized that nothing I was coming up with would be able to stand the eyes of science. So I needed to take it a step further. So I knew Chad. I knew that he had some ideas as well. And so I reached out to him, and it just kind of took off from there.
So tell us about the locations that you picked and whether or not these locations had a history of people, I don't know, being poked or prodded or whatnot.
Well, they definitely have to have some sort of history of physical contact with the body. Otherwise, you know, you're not going to be able to get the results you're looking for if you're going to go to a place that's just reports of apparitions. So we chose a place that was the former brothel where that young man had been fondled. So we went back there, and of course, a prison. You know, there's been lots of reports of people being physically contacted in a prison. In fact, the prison is where Chad got scratched.
Yeah, I did. I was pretty surprised.
You were surprised that something actually happened?
Yeah, you know, I mean, a little bit into before I got scratched, you know, there had been a lot of people that were experiencing some, you know, different types of physical things happening around them. And then, you know, when you're actually sitting there and I'm doing a bit of a side experiment and something happens and you get scratched, you know, it's quite alarming. It was nothing that I was expecting to have happen.
And is this something that happened to more people as these experiments continued to take place, Ross and Chad?
Oh, yeah. In fact, one of the things that I'm so grateful for Chad is he helped me to expand my Spectre system, which was a sensor array that I had put together. And he felt that we could do a lot more with it. And he expanded on Spectre, which we now have Spectre 2.0. And he actually discovered that there was a pattern to the phenomena in the two cases where people were scratched, including him, that there was something going on, that we could validate these encounters. And I'll let him explain a little bit more.
Yeah, so it was pretty interesting. You know, some of the things that Ross was using, you know, were like ultrasonic sensors and things that are running rapid data collection. And so instead of having one system where he had his, you know, laptop and a DAC system that's grabbing information, I decided to build a four node system so that we could actually put it around the people and have a 360 degree sensing around them while they were in their tests. And so we found that, you know, when things were happening physical, we were able to pick up some information on the ultrasonic sensor suggesting something was moving, and a PIR sensor suggesting there was a heat signature that was also related to it.
And then you, I'm sure, began a process to rule out the people who were present and make sure that none of them, it wasn't, a ghost in the system.
Well, when we're doing these tests, we were over 300 feet away on a different floor of the prison. So, you know, we account for everybody that's around. We run baseline tests to make sure that the data that we're collecting isn't, you know, something that's already happening rhythmically in the space. So we have these baselines that we can subtract from the actual data that we're collecting.
Who did you get to strip down naked and go into these sites, Ross?
Well, Chad was one of them.
These were all willing participants. We should make known.
I was going to say Chad was a big surprise. You know, when I've been lucky enough to get some subjects to be naked and alone in a lot of these haunted locations, but as Chad was witnessing the phenomena that was happening, you know, and again, this is a guy coming from a more skeptical view, and he's seeing things happen. He decided to try it himself.
Yeah, I mean, in order for me to really understand, you know, what it is, I have to experience it. You know, in science, you either have to know what you think you're looking for, or, you know, at least some aspects of whatever the target metrics are you're looking for to try to find. And watching other people experience this, I really felt like if I didn't go in and experience it myself, then I wouldn't really know what it is. And I wouldn't understand how to take this empirical evidence that people are feeling and connect that to scientific data.
So besides being scratched, what else did you experience?
I mean, we could audibly hear things happening around the prison. We had other things. So what was interesting was that, you know, Spectre picked up some instances of movement and heat signatures, but not everything that everybody experienced was something that Spectre could pick up. So there's a lot more, you know, data collection, and there's a lot more sensors that we're looking at now to add to the system or add to further systems to try to collect more information, either what's happening with the human body itself or with, you know, more environmental sensors. That's what it is in this instance. You know, with the human body and people feeling these touches or feeling these presence around them, that's really the sensor we have to use first to add the scientific data to. Because otherwise, if we were just looking at data and things are happening in the space, we wouldn't know specifically, you know, what was or what wasn't data we should be paying attention to.
And I'm guessing that this is something that kind of got refined over the years of doing, you know, the research.
Of course, people need to understand this is a learning experience. And, you know, surprisingly, me and Chad are the pioneers in trying to track the phenomena. No one's ever tried to do what we're doing. And so it's a learning experience for both of us. And we, you know, learn from our mistakes and better ourselves. And, you know, we learn from a skeptical view and see, okay, what else can we do to build the credibility in trying to prove or even sometimes disprove some of this stuff as well. You know, a lot of this has to bring debunking into it. But when you have situations where people are having some sort of experience and the equipment is validating that, there's readings to show that something happened, you know that this is happening outside the body. It's not psychological. There is something happening here. And that's the evidence that we are presenting to the world.
Yeah, you know, I would say we're just starting to scratch the surface of what, you know, what it is Ross and I want to do. We have a list of experiments and we have some really crazy ideas, you know, to try to further advance the work that we're doing. But I think it's just really interesting that, you know, at the end of the day, we were able to find, you know, we were able to connect the human experience to data and have that actually correlate time-wise, because everything we do is stamped in real time. So all the data we collect is stamped with real time, every you know, less than 100 milliseconds, and the videos and everything. So we can go back and line everything up and see what was going on in those times.
Chad, is this software or technology or something that you patented in order to be able to detect this stuff?
You know, I don't know, because when going about trying to figure it out and, you know, put what Ross had to begin with, you know, this type of stuff would be, I think, kind of hard to patent. You know, most of the stuff that we're using is open source hardware, and we're adding that with the, you know, programs that we write. And so we're able to do the statistical analysis of the data we're collecting. But, you know, otherwise, most of this stuff is open source materials.
But you got to know how to use it, and you got to know what you're looking for, right?
Exactly. You got to know how to calibrate everything properly, you know, in the software and do all that. That's where it really gets kind of tricky. You know, if we just throw the sensors on, you don't calibrate things, you could find false data. So there's a lot of rigor that goes in. And every time we go out and use the, everything's recalibrated to make sure everything's running the way it should be.
Were you able to see, like, in real time, someone being touched, you know, at the moment they reacted?
Yeah, you know, the data, we're not at the point yet where we can stream the live data, but when we went back over the larger data sets, and during Parasense, we collected somewhere in the realm of 10 million data points for that whole thing, you know, because we're just rapidly grabbing it, and we're grabbing data for long periods of time so that we can try to correlate, you know, experiments versus non-experiments. And so when you look at these massive, you know, 70, 80,000 lines of data, you know, and you're scrolling through, you can very quickly see where everything's steady and then it goes off. And then you can look back at the time signature and see if that lines up.
Ross, in your years of paranormal investigation, was Chad kind of the missing link? You kind of needed him a lot in order to go down this road, huh?
Well, definitely. I've always been more, I've always approached the paranormal and more scientifically. I've always had that mindset. But I'm not a scientist. I haven't been trained in that. And I knew how to do a controlled experiment. I knew, you know, ways to try and build the credibility and make sure, you know, things aren't contaminated. But having Chad and his credibility stamped on this as well just, you know, takes it to a whole nother level. Because, you know, there's not a lot of people in his field are willing to put their name to something like this. You know, for just, you know, the scrutiny that they'll get, you know, saying, oh, yeah, that's just bogus crap anyways. You know, and all I'm trying to do is open people's minds that there could be something here. I'm not a ghost hunter that says, yes, ghosts exist and you need to believe. We don't have enough data yet. But we need people like Chad in this field to help us get the right data. Not all this suggestive evidence that people are dependent on with a lot of these television shows. We need the real research. We need to have a better understanding. And that's always been my approach. So to have somebody like Chad willing enough to, hey, yeah, I'll give it a look. I'll give it a try. Let's see what happens. And then be fortunate enough that during his, you know, time out with me to see what we are experiencing, that even made it even better. Because, you know, we have to learn with the paranormal field, it's all about being at the right place at the right time. And I was lucky enough to get Chad at the right time to have him experience some of this stuff as well, to just open his mind just a little bit more and say, wow, Ross, you're really not wasting your time. There is something to this. And I think that just helps us take it even further.
Yeah, I will say that, you know, when I was first hanging out with Ross, you know, a lot of his experiments were based around this empirical evidence and how do we, you know, things were happening around him. And so around the subjects. And so I could see that his method and the way he was thinking about this were good. And so the thing that we were missing was just the data collection, you know, a lot of data collection, not single point data collection. And, you know, I mean, we're collecting data, you know, in 100 millisecond or less range. And we're finding out that these experiences that we collect don't last long. They're less than a second in some cases, fraction of seconds, a few seconds at max. And, you know, and that's really what we need to figure out is what's happening in those really quick moments that are so fleeting.
And one of the things that we've learned just by doing this research, most ghost hunting equipment that these groups are dependent on is not sensitive enough or even fast enough to pick up some of the phenomena that we're experiencing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I thought it was really interesting, too. You know, when I look back, one of the big things that people use are the EMS sensors. And out there at Brushy Mountain, you know, you don't have cell service. There's no Wi-Fi where we are at. There's none of these things. And the things that we picked up didn't show anything on EMF. And, I mean, I'm not saying that I don't think EMF is a thing. I'm going to dig way deep into that and try to figure out what EMF, EMI, and all these other things are. But I think it's just interesting that that was the one thing that was kind of missing from the data we collected. There was no signatures of high amounts of EMF.
We will pause at this current point in time and then continue our program with Chad Goodwin and with Ross Allison. Parasense is the name of the film that will debut at the Oregon Ghost Conference on Friday night. The name of this episode, Violated by Ghosts, will continue on Into the Paranormal. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Paranormal News. In a rare feat, an asteroid has been spotted before crashing to Earth. 2022 EB5, a relatively small asteroid at just 6.5 feet wide, entered Earth's atmosphere on the night of March 11th near Norway at a speed of 11 miles per second. Although space rocks enter the atmosphere routinely, this one is unique. It's only the fifth time on record that an asteroid has been spotted before impact. Not long after, infrasound instruments in Greenland and Norway recorded an explosion that was likely from the object shattering in the sky before landing in the Arctic Ocean. The blast carried the intensity of about 2,000 tons of TNT. Most objects are similar to this explosion as they fall through Earth's atmosphere, and with most of the planet covered by water, the majority of space rocks land at sea. This is Daniel Brewer. Paranormal News.
Come in this room. Come touch me.
Oh, oh my God!
Touch, one of the five senses we can't live without. It helps guide us through our lives. Touch gives us warmth and comfort, as well as pain and suffering. But what about those stories of people getting touched by ghosts and spirits? People getting scratched and molested by something unseen? How is this happening? Is it real or fabricated? And if it is real,
are you trying to touch me?
What could it mean?
Even though science has yet been able to prove or disprove these strange encounters, through the years of patterns and consistency, shows us the phenomenon is true.
Watch your step. Hide under your blankets. Whatever you do, prepare yourself for what's coming through your speakers into the paranormal.
Violated by Ghosts tonight on Into the Paranormal. I am Jeremy Scott with my guests Ross Allison and Chad Goodwin. The website touchedbyaghost.com. The documentary is Parasense, the naked experiments based on real-life experiments in haunted locations where the subject stripped down naked and willingly participate in these experiments. We've heard what's happened to Chad. Be interested to hear what happened to other participants in this. Chad is going to be joining us here for this segment, and then we'll have Ross for the final hour of the program. So I want to try to pick Chad's brain as much as we can. Have you been able to use the research method to differentiate, say other energy that's maybe not paranormal energy from being confused with paranormal energy?
Well, I think that's a tough question when you sit down and say that. In order for us to start finding data that correlates with the human experience, I think that's just scratching the surface. Well, I think what we've done here is we've taken what Ross has shown over his years and have added to it, right? And we got some data. But I would say that we have a long ways to go, only because there was other experiences that we couldn't explain, that didn't get picked up on our sensors. So there's just more. There's just, I think, a lot more, honestly, that we need to do.
And that's common, right, Ross, is that things happen, but there's just no recording of them for whatever reason.
That is a common problem that we have, is there's not enough scientific method behind the research that we want to claim, you know, our experiences as paranormal experiences. Today, ghost hunters are dependent on apps and, you know, on tools that give you more suggestive evidence and don't really prove anything paranormal. And that's where we're hurting in this society of ghost hunting, is we don't have enough people like Chad to back us up, to help us, to guide us in the correct method in trying to collect the data we need to experience this. I think that's been the problem all these years, is we haven't had enough people to share with us and teach us the right ways in ghost hunting. And I think that's where we're trying to break through that wall. And saying, you know, it's great that you can pull out an EMF detector and say, yeah, I got a ghost. But let's be honest, that doesn't prove anything. It just shows that there's an odd EMF reading. That's all it shows. But to have, you know, more people like, you know, Chad to show us a little bit better on how we can collect the evidence, I think that's going to guide us on a more stronger path to understanding the paranormal. And like we said, it may not be paranormal. We may be able to explain some of this, but we have to have a better understanding of what it is we're trying to capture. And that's what we're trying to do here.
Did you find that the ghosts were more interested in men or women or, say, those of certain age groups or types?
Well, like Chad said, we still need more data. We need to do more experiments to have a better understanding of the sexes and, you know, the environments. Right now, we've only been fortunate enough to get more naked men than women. So that's been a struggle for us. And rightfully so, when you got a bunch of guys coming up to a woman saying, hey, would you get naked for us and hang out on a place? You know, a lot of women are going to be like, no. So what we're trying to do is just, you know, build that credibility so that, you know, if women want to come into this environment, we want to make sure that they feel safe and to understand that we are truly trying to have more of a scientific understanding of what happens to the human body, especially a female human body, when you put them in a situation like a prison. You know, that might be a situation that might trigger some more phenomena. So it's going to be, there's so many different combinations that we need to research more to have a better understanding. But I've always said in the past that if we can have a better understanding of one particular phenomena, and right now we're focused on touch, we can at least have an idea of how that phenomena works. And then we can use that as our roots to move on to other elements of the paranormal.
The reason I asked is if they were interested in certain kinds of individuals. Did certain participants experience things that didn't happen to the others?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, there was people who got scratched. There was things that happened where, you know, people heard things but didn't get scratched. There was, you know, we used some of the older tools, too, to try to see if, you know, a blend of commonly used tools now and our data could line up. And, you know, some of that stuff had interactions and our equipment didn't. And our equipment had interactions when those things didn't. And so, yeah, I mean, it seems to be a pretty broad bunch of variables to try to figure out.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that it's one of those things that it's the evidence, whatever evidence is only going to happen if the ghosts or the spirits or the entities want you to capture it?
Well, that's interesting. You know, how it manifests, I think, might be different depending on what it is we're capturing. So one of the things I noticed early was Ross was showing me some EVPs, and this is while I was trying to learn what EVPs were. And I spent some time in radio as an audio engineer back in my days. And so awesome. I could hear in that EVP, you know, one of the things when you're an audio engineer, you learn quickly is cell phones will cause a ticking through your equipment, right? There's there's that EMI interface that happens there. But what was interesting was hearing the tick on the phone while somebody was doing the session early and then hearing what the voice was that came through. it had a very similar like range of sounds, distance of sound, and similar things like that. So one of the things that we're going to try to hunt down is how do we record EVPs better? Like, is there a specific way we can capture electromagnetic interference rather than, you know, EMF?
And we lost the guys once again, which is very, very interesting. But we'll get them back because we got them back once before. This is a very, very odd occurrence. And the fact that it has happened a second time is literally telling me everything that I need to know, which is that, well, if they want us to communicate, we'll communicate. And if they don't want us to communicate, we won't communicate. Guys, you're back with us. I don't know, Ross, can you help us out here? Is there something you can do to keep the ghosts from interacting?
Well, that's the biggest challenge we have in this field is, you know, when you're dealing with something intelligent, you're dealing with something that has free will. It doesn't have to communicate to you if it doesn't want to. You know, and as we've learned, you know, to try apply the scientific method into this field, it's always been, you know, can you prove or can you, you know, repeat the same process every time you do it? And you can't in this field. And that has always been the biggest challenge. And I think that's always been why people don't always pursue the scientific method in ghost hunting, because you're not always going to get the response that you're hoping for every time. But then it's always, like I said, you know, it's all about being at the right place at the right time. So there's so many challenges to this field, and I think a lot of people are not always in the right mindset to pursue it in this way. So I think that's one of the things that why me and Chad just really clicked, because we were both on the same page. We both wanted the same thing, and we both agree on the method in trying to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree on that for sure. You know, that's one of the great things is we're not trying to struggle in any way for information or who has a better idea. You know, we're just working together to make sure that everything that we're doing is lined up.
Did you guys find that there were results at all of the locations in which you investigated, or were there things that just didn't happen for whatever reason?
A little bit of both. I mean, yeah, a little bit of both is really what happened there. You know, it's things that we didn't expect happen at all happen. The things we were hoping to happen didn't happen when we thought they might happen.
The best thing you can do is always be prepared, right?
Yeah, on either perspective. But you obviously know from your years of doing this investigation, Ross, is you can't go into it with preconceived notions expecting right. stuff to happen, because they're not at our beck and call.
No, they're not. And as I said, that's the biggest challenge, is that we don't know what the right conditions are to get whatever intelligent entity out there to communicate to us. You know, that's the big challenge right there. And then when you do have that communication or that connection, hopefully you can have the data to back that up. And like Chad said, it's just a lot of times, you know, you're not always getting the readings that you're hoping to get. You can have the equipment go off, but yet Spectre won't pick up anything. But then you could have Spectre go off and the equipment won't pick up anything. So there's those challenges. And again, we just have to continue to do the research and fine tune the equipment and find that thin line that we're looking for that says this is paranormal. This is what we've been looking for all these years. And then once we've got that, then we can start to continue on with other realms of the paranormal, because now we've got our route.
Yeah, we need to know what data and how it's collected. You know, when we start to gather more and more of these instances with data, you know, we can start to correlate those things, and then we can start to use data to look for things rather than having to have a person there and the data line up. You know, we just really need to hone on what makes sense, when, and what does it look like.
So the big question is what is a ghost made of? We don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That's one of the things we may not know at all. We may not know at all. We may just find that the phenomena is happening and we can show that it happens, but you know, I mean, who knows what it's going to take to figure out what it actually is, or if it's in between states or in our reality, or, you know, in our, like, you know, it seems like whatever it is slightly off base from us if we can't actually experience and see it. So, I mean, it's huge. It's a very huge thing to try to figure out.
Of course, if anybody has the answer to that question, you're more than welcome to call in 855-790-8255, 855-790-8255, toll free. Outside North America, it's 503-506-0396, and on Skype at ITP51. Chad, what in your mind needs to help happen next with the research in order to ultimately prove, touch from, you know, some ghost or from some other paranormal energy is at play here?
You know, I think we need to get down to a finer data collection, you know, using some of the sensors we have that work, throwing away some of the sensors that don't work. We see that there's some kind of manifestation of movement, you know, right now in some instances. And so we're going to add, you know, more high-tech sensors with higher information, you know, data collecting rates. You know, we might be using anything from microwave to radar to, you know, we want to sense through in the space between spaces and try to understand what's happening there. And with some of the technology that we're looking at, we can do that. And then there's also some imaging technologies we might want to use to look at the refractive index change around people, around objects, so that we can see if gases are moving or if there's something there that's happening. Because, you know, when Ross first asked me to come on this adventure, one of the first things I was thinking of is that energy can't be created or destroyed, then the energy's here. And so if you know, we're seeing that people are getting scratched, and if this is manifesting that way, then it would have to be moving gas. Something has to be happening, you know, and so that's one of the things we want to go down. But if it's like plasma or if it's some other localized ion thing, That I think shows up on some types of imaging that we're looking at using too for possibly the next parasense.
And in the film, you actually recreate some of the movement. And so can you kind of describe what you believe happens in some of these cases where some sort of entity comes in and touches one of these subjects, and then I don't know if they float off or they just disappear or whatever the case is?
Yeah, that's that. You know, you bring up a good point. That when we start to collect data, then we can start to visualize the data. You know, we can start to kind of make a hypothesis on what we think is happening with that data. So in parasense, you know, with the two scratches we were able to grab information on, we were able to kind of animate. We were able to animate what we think and show movement in real time and how fast it was moving in and out of the space. And, you know, that's when it gets really exciting, is when you can pull data together and start to visualize more and more about what you think is happening. And so right now, like I said, we have 360 degree around the subjects, but we have like north, south, east, and west, right? I mean, there's four directions that we're looking specifically. And so now that we have this data, one of the things that Ross and I are talking about is making more of these notes, you know, 20, 30 of them in a space. And see, now, you know, we know something's happening. So we could only animate what we thought was happening just coming straight toward and away. But with more directionality, more data, we could start to track the movement through a space. And then we can say, okay, it came in over here and it left over there. Right now, the data we have just kind of shows that something showed up and something disappeared. And in between there, stuff happened.
So you have a basic idea of what happened, but you need a more fine-tuned image to tell you exactly what took place.
Yeah, with more data, we can visualize more of the movement around the space.
Because we're dealing with energy here, and we are energy as well, have you found through your research, guys, that the human body really is maybe more of a tool when it comes to detecting or even influencing some of these events than maybe we had originally thought?
Yeah, I mean, it does look like, you know, when you watch parasense, that there is some alignment of people sensing things and things happening around them in the space. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked to some people like Lloyd Auerbach, who is in parasense. You know, he tends to think that it's possible that we not only could something be happening, but we could also influence the action to happen, right?
That we project the phenomena.
Yeah, and so if that's the case, then that's why we want to start data collecting off the body.
Very interesting. 855-790-8255. That's 855-790-TALK, 8255. Outside North America, 503-506-0396. And on Skype, it is ITP51. We do have a call coming in. Want to squeeze that in here before the end of the hour. Hello. Let's give it just a few minutes for them to join us here. I believe we have Jen coming to us from the state of Minnesota. So hello, Jen, you are on the air with Ross Allison and with Chad Goodwin. Your question or comment?
Yes. My question is, have you guys tried anything to do with like sleep, like when a person is sleeping, and tried to gather data that way? Because with me, when they come to me, I see them during the day as apparitions, but at night, they come to me through my dreams when I'm sleeping. And the reason they do that is because my energy is so high that they're afraid of it for some reason. I'm more vulnerable at night.
That's one of the things, we've talked to, and I've talked to different mediums and people that have had these experiences. And that's one of the things I think makes it so interesting is the way people experience the phenomena is so different. Like, it almost seems like there's these different groups of how people experience it. And, you know, I've heard a few other people say that they've had more of a dream stream. I've had people say it happens to them in their conscious state. I've had people, you know, and so I feel like, you know, that's a whole other thing. And that's more the collecting data from the body. You know, we want to collect stress levels, heart rates, breathing, all oxygen saturation, all those things to try to understand. And then if we can figure out how that works, then we can start to analyze sleep possibly and say, hey, you know, something that lines up with the phenomena.
Go ahead.
I do have one story that I could share.
Go ahead, Ross.
When we do these experiments, like when we stay the night in a brothel, we have cameras on the guys spending the night in the brothel. So there's cameras watching them the whole time. And the first time I ever did that, while one guy was sleeping, and they're sleeping in the nude, they didn't have any covers on them, something touched his genitals. And we had it right on camera where there was something messing around with something down there.
Jen, did you have a question or another comment regarding activity in your sleep?
Well, yes. See, they stay around longer when you're sleeping, like I said, because you're in a vulnerable kind of state and everything, and you're not awake and your energy is not fighting with them. For some reason, they're afraid of energies. If you've got a high energy presence, you know, if you're setting off a high energy to them, they will not stick around very long.
So perhaps what Jen might be saying, Ross and Chad, is that you may have better results if your subjects were sleeping?
Go ahead, Ross.
Well, I was going to say, you know, we're always open to trying different experiments. And like I said, I have had cameras on people sleeping in some of these haunted locations. So we're always open to different things. It's very possible. But maybe setting up the Spectre system while they sleep would be another interesting experiment.
Chad, yeah. I look forward to seeing you at the Oregon Ghost Conference next weekend. Folks, get your tickets for Parasense debuting Friday night at the Times Theater, and we'll talk to you next weekend, Chad.
All right. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Stick with us, Ross Allison. And Jen, if you have another question or a comment, hold the line, because we will continue with Ross Allison, Violated by Ghosts, on Into the Parabnormal. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Save your data and listen for free by calling 701-719-9703, courtesy of TalkStream Live.
Paranormal, we go.
When the lights go down, the strange comes out into the paranormal.
From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, I am Jeremy Scott. Into the Paranormal continues on this Saturday into Sunday. Live next weekend at the Oregon Ghost Conference. Come out and join us. See us. We'll be doing a live show on Saturday at 3 p.m., Sunday at 1 p.m., live there at the Oregon Ghost Conference. $15, your admission price gets you all of the free events, the speakers, and of course, if you're interested in more, you can sign up for the VIP, get some classes, maybe take in some ghost tours, some haunted investigations, that sort of thing. Sounds like a good time. On the coast, next weekend in Seaside for the Oregon Ghost Conference, and we'll see you there, hopefully, and you'll hear us here on FM News 101 KXL as well, midnight on Saturday. We're talking with Ross Allison, whose film Parasense, along with Chad Goodwin, will premiere at the Oregon Ghost Conference at the Times Theater on Friday night. Jen's joining us from Minnesota, and she has a question. I'm interested in learning more about her experiences that have happened while she has been sleeping. Jen, I don't need to know whether or not you were naked or not, but as you were sleeping, what sorts of things happened to you?
Well, it's just a lot of times they come to me in my dreams and they ask me to help them, whether it is to help them find someone that they, you know, have lost, or to help them reconnect with someone that they have to say goodbye to. So it's not like they don't touch me or anything like that. It's almost like they're just asking for help. Like one of them asked me to help find their brother who was buried underneath the oak tree. And that was a strange one because it happened to be underneath my parents' oak tree.
Huh.
And the reason I say that is my parents were lifting up their house to put a basement slab underneath the house. And one of the backhoes hit the oak tree. And after it hit the oak tree, the cupboard flew open and silverware started coming out of the drawers and everything, like falling out of the drawers and everything. So it's like we had just really disturbed something, you know, almost like if you go into an Indian burial ground and you go and you disturb their peace, that's what we had done. So to me, when they had asked me to help find their brother, he was buried underneath the oak tree. To me, I think their brother is buried underneath my parents' oak tree. And it's just, I told my parents, whatever you do, do not cut down that tree. I said, you can cut it down to a stump. I said, but do not remove that tree.
or else. But you also say that that these apparitions or whatever they're called, it almost feels like you know, a gust of wind going by.
Yes, when they come to you, when they come to me, and I've heard that they come to other people too, you kind of tend to see your little hairs in your hand or in your arms or whatever kind of go up, and you kind of tend to get goosebumps, and it feels like a little gust of wind is going right by you when you start seeing the shadows. So it's like they carry their own energy presence, you know. And it's really weird because when, you know, I've seen both of them. I've seen the good and I've seen the bad. And when they're not so good, they're the aggressive kind, you actually feel very sad, depressed, and everything when they come around. Like real, like dark, very dark. When they come around. Sometimes you can even get mad when they come around.
Wow. Well, we appreciate you calling in, Jen. Thank you so much for adding some insight to the program here. And yeah, Ross, you might try having these subjects sleep and to see if that influences things one way or the other.
Definitely. We have to be open and try different experiments to find out, because dream communication has been a phenomenon that's been reported, you know, for a long time. But a lot of this all just stems from perception on how people perceive their own dreams.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't always use that as proof to the paranormal. You know, when she's talking about having a situation where she feels that there's somebody buried, you know, under the oak tree. Well, the only way you're going to be able to prove something like that is dig up the old oak tree, you know, see if there's somebody there. You know, that's what we're up against in situations like that, where she perceives that there's something there. But if you want proof, that's the level you have to take it to.
Absolutely. So, Ross, can you tell us what locations you picked out for these experiments as you feature in Parasense?
Well, I've been doing this research for 6 years, so it was really hard to pick out locations. A lot of it had to do with places I've already been to. So the two that became part of the main story was an old brothel in Washington, Northport, Washington, known as Kook's. That actually was a former brothel up until the 1930s. So we had that history, plus, as I was talking about earlier, that's where the young man was groped. So that obviously played a story into the origins of all this research. And then, of course, the other segment went into the prison, Brushy Mountain Prison. And why I chose that location is because in a prior experiment that I had done there, Nick, one of my subjects, had a really traumatic experience where he actually saw something. And so that was the reason why I decided to go back, because I wanted to see if I could bring Nick back to that location.
And what happened?
Well, he had an experience. His first time there was where he saw something manifest, and it terrified him so much that he went screaming naked out of the prison. And so, again, this is before Chad. So this is before we updated the Spectre system. So I had this personal experience that he had. I had it on video, but I didn't have any data to back it up. So this is where Chad came into play, and I thought, you know, let's go back to the prison. Let's bring Nick back. Let's see if he's able to confront his fears and do this experiment again, but this time we're more prepared. We have the Spectre system around him. We can see what's going on. We got more cameras around him. And that's what I was talking about. This is a learning experience for both of us. You know, I'm taking old experiments that I've done in the past 6 years, and I'm now able to advance them a little bit more as we continue on with the research. So here's an opportunity where hopefully we'll have that experience again, and we can prove it. So it was one of those situations where, you know, granted, it didn't happen as dramatic the first time, but we were able to get some other things out of it and validate those with the data.
Fascinating. Ross, I've got so much more that I want to talk about with you here. We're going to take a short break, and to come right back and wrap up our conversation with Ross Allison. Parasense will debut at the Oregon Ghost Conference at the Times Theater this Friday night. You can get your tickets at OregonGhostConference.com and more information about the film at TouchedByAGhost.com. Into the Paranormal. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
Abnormal News. The cattle mutilation mystery continues with the latest case out of Eastern Oregon. A mutilated bull was found by a rancher in John Day last month, drained of blood with its testicles, scrotum, tongue, and lips removed with surgical precision. The rancher says there were no signs of any tracks around the carcass. This follows a pattern that dates back decades. However, the Pacific Northwest, particularly Oregon, seems to have attracted the attention lately with a rash of cattle mutilations over the past few years. FBI records state there have been thousands of killings and mutilations of cattle across the U.S. since the 1970s. The prevailing theories are that satanic cults or UFOs and aliens are responsible. This is Daniel Brewer, Fair Abnormal News.
Hey, you in the corner here, that's his people. You around here?
Ah.
Oh, man.
Really? forehead.
At the exact time that I was scratched, looking at the larger data set, you can see anomalies in the PIR and ultrasonic sensors.
We can use that data to then create an animation showing what happened in approximate real time. So it looks like whatever it was moved toward me and then away very quickly.
When dealing with the paranormal, you have to be prepared for just about anything. When the spirits are truly the ones in charge, the question is, how does the body perceive these experiences? What are the cause and effects of when this happens? And most of all, how do you prove these intimate encounters? For the first time in history, our journey into this untapped realm has only just begun.
From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon, somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, you're traveling into the paranormal with Jeremy Scott.
My guest is Ross Allison as we wind down our time with him tonight on this Saturday into Sunday into the paranormal. Oregon Ghost Conference next weekend in Seaside. Parasense, you can see the premiere on Friday night. So many fascinating questions that have come up tonight. The thing is, Ross, we have a very, very juvenile audience, and they have dirty minds, and 90% of the questions are not fit for air. Well, of course, the puns are just unlimited as well.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, in all honesty, if you were to try and prove touch, nudity just makes sense. Because, unfortunately, clothes just contaminate their experience. And you'll constantly always second guess, you know, was this paranormal or was it just, you know, your shirt adjusting? So, you know, if you put the perversions aside, you know, it's science has used nudity throughout history. And we're just trying to do the same thing. You know, we're very serious about what we do. And I'm sure there's lots of jokes that we can all, you know, bring to the table. But we are really trying to find an answer to what happens to the body, the physical body, when people have these encounters. And I think we're getting closer and closer to that answer.
Do you think that you came close to proving what you set out to do?
I think we've opened more doors. You know, we don't have all the answers. Like, you know, Chad had said, you know, we need more data. We need more of these experiences to happen and the spectra system to collect that information to show us what is actually happening around the body. So there needs to be more data to prove these experiences. But we have, just in the short time that we've done this, we have proven that there is something happening outside the body. The data is collecting that, and there's also a pattern to the situation where two of our subjects, like I said, got scratched. And in both times, the data was exactly the same. So that right there should open people's mind to the scientific aspect of what we're trying to do. There is something happening physically outside the body. The environment is affected by this. What is it? We don't know. But it should get people more interested in what we do.
I want to go back to something that was brought up earlier in the conversation, which was that contact literally does happen in a split second. And if you were to capture it, you would have to capture it through some other method than what has been used before. Because you've been on enough ghost investigations, you know that you don't have a second chance to go back and get it. You either got it or you didn't.
Right. And that's the biggest problem, as I said, you know, in this field is the education that's coming into the field is from a lot of the television shows. And people, it becomes monkey see, monkey do, you know, the blind leading the blind. And when we're in a situation where, you know, people are more dependent on suggestive evidence and suggestive devices, we are not going to advance ourselves in this field. We need to be able to apply more science to this. And I'm hoping that I'm in a position that I can open people's minds and steer them in the right direction to say, hey, there's more to it than just holding an EMF detector. There's more to ghost hunting than just dependent on your spirit box. There's more to it than just, you know, hoping that the words will come through on your ovulus. We need more data. And that's what I'm trying to get people more excited about the data, what we can learn from that. Because right now, we're not really learning anything. We're just muddying up the waters.
And I want to go back to maybe further expand on a point you said just a moment ago about how clothing really dilutes the situation. That might be my words, but and that's because if someone pokes you or prods you or does whatever to you, that I guess it would be cushioned through your clothing, and you may not feel it, you may not react. But if you were there in the nude and something happened, I think we're all a little bit more sensitive. In the fact that, you know, when we're vulnerable.
Well, people don't realize that skin is the largest sensing organ. You know, there's a reason we need to know what's happening to our body to help us move throughout our day. So one of the things that, you know, you have to understand is by removing the clothing, it helps us to have, we're using the body as a totally new tool in this field. So, you know, as I said, when you're being touched and you're wearing clothing, you're always going to second guess it. You know, was it just my jacket settling? Because anybody in the scientific field is going to tell you just that. They're going to say, well, you know what? There's not enough evidence when you're wearing a shirt to tell me that, oh, you know, I felt a hand on my back. I'm just going to just roll my eyes at you because I'm going to think it was just your shirt. So by stripping everybody down, we're getting rid of that contamination. But also, if you're trying to have a better understanding of what happens when people are touched, you need to see what happens to the skin, the muscles. So we have to have that better understanding. And so I think, you know, that is going to give us another outlet, more data that we've never had before.
Were there things that surprised you about this project either way?
I think the biggest surprise was the scratching. You know, yes, I've heard it happen. It's been documented, you know, thousands and hundreds of thousands of times before in the past. But for the first time in history, we actually documented a scratch from the beginning and the end, where we actually... we look over our subject before we start the experiment. Just before they sit down in the chair, we look them over, me and Chad. So there is also a witness, and it's also on camera. So we can look over the body, make sure that there's no, you know, physical marks on them. We even have the standard questions. Are you feeling any pain, any burning sensations? And then, you know, we go from there. So we go through their whole body, make sure that there's no marks on them, and then we start the experiment. And they're sitting in a controlled environment, sitting still, coaxing, trying to talk, communicate, whatever they can, depending on the experiment, for at least 15, 20 minutes. And this is all on camera. They're on camera as well. And then when you go back and you look at your subject, and to your surprise, there is a bloody scratch that just appeared. To me,
but a bloody scratch, because a scratch,
exactly,
you could trace back to, well, that was there before, but a bloody scratch proves that something just happened.
And we actually watched it manifest from, you know, just the slight red scratch to actually getting more bloody. So that right there was a huge emotional experience for me, because all the time that people told me that they've been scratched, and even the times that I felt I was scratched, you know, I've always second guessed it. I've always, well, you know, it's great you had that experience, but how do I know you just didn't rub up against a rusty nail while you're in an abandoned building? You know, you have to hopefully take people's words for it when they claim to have these experiences. But when you have the documentation, and from beginning to end, and that scratch appears, that just opens a whole new world to this field, that there is something to this.
Ross Cassie would like to know, are these people with known experiences that are put into these experiments or people who have not had experiences? Is it a combination of both?
It's both, you know, and we do interview the subjects beforehand and even after. We've had people that didn't even believe in ghosts. You know, look at Chad as an example. He wasn't sure what to believe when it came to the paranormal. And so he was open-minded enough to say, hey, you know, I'll kind of walk through and see what you do on these experiments, and then decided, you know what, I'll do it myself. And then for him to actually have a scratch happen. And that was carefully documented as well. And so that right there is an interesting experiment, you know, because you get these people that don't believe in ghosts, and then they have this physical phenomena. So, yeah, it's been a little bit of, you know, those who are believers and those who are skeptics have had, you know, experiences.
Chad, so the film's going to premiere on Friday night, and then it'll be available for streaming afterwards. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, it'll be available on Scare Network.
Fantastic. And the website, touchedbyaghost.com, for those who are interested, and OregonGhostConference.com. Get your tickets for the Parasense premiere at the Times Theater on Friday night. And Ross, the good thing about this is we get to continue our conversation next week at the Ghost Conference, live and in the flesh.
You bet.
But please don't bring any ghosts, and I'm gonna keep my clothes on. That's my promise to the audience and to you as well. And I look forward to getting back out there to meeting everyone. So I hope folks will come and say hello as we'll be broadcasting live out there on Saturday and Sunday. Thanks, Ross, for joining us for another fascinating show.
Oh, you bet. Anytime.
To be continued at the Oregon Ghost Conference next weekend, I am Jeremy Scott from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. We have all of the information up at ParanormalRadio.com and on our Facebook page. Good night, everyone.